it's too cold for me.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. The one and only Don of Resistance is here. The champ is here.
Good morning, girl.
The champ is here.
Good morning, friend.
The champ is here. Hey, yeah. How you doing, Maggie?
I'm great, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Let me ask you. I said the first thing I would ask you is I was listening to Dan Kelly this morning, and he was trying to sound the alarm to Republicans that you cannot have a person like Judge Janet Protasiewicz on the Supreme Court because, dun, 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 she's too liberal. What is that? What is that?
That's some fear-mongering nonsense typical of Dan Kelly. I mean, so Judge Janet has sat on the felony court in Milwaukee County for a long time. She rotates, but she spent the bulk of her time. She's really a specialist in the felony court. She has had her life threatened, her car broken into. She has presided over some very serious gang-related, massive traffic weight drug dealing, as well as murders and murders for hire. That's Judge Janet. Let me recap for you Dan Kelly's extensive experience as a trial judge in the criminal court system. Oh, wait, yeah, Dan doesn't have any of that. it takes a lot of...
Moxie.
It's very reflective, as you were. Yeah, moxie, and it's so reflective of where we are politically right now, Earl, that, like, the indictment of someone that renders them unfit to serve on the state Supreme Court is that they are more liberal or progressive. I thought our courts were supposed to represent a variety of views, and this fear-mongering that keeps that the conservatives have put out about these liberal judges legislating from the bench. All judges do that. All judges do that. That's, in fact, the purpose of especially Supreme Court. Supreme Court, very frequently, a bulk of their docket, whether you're talking about the federal Supreme Court or the state Supreme Court, one of their primary jobs is to review laws that are passed by the legislature to ensure that they are constitutional. And when they find that something is unconstitutional, like the United States Supreme Court did, right, very recently on a whole number of months, right, you undo the legislation. Now, in the case of Dobbs, of course, they were undoing a prior court decision, but it had the effect of legislating from the bench. So that's something that all judges do, and it's frankly one of the roles of a Supreme Court, and Dan Kelly well knows that.
He knows it, but that's the only, tool that he has in the toolbox to use. And it works, right? It's been working.
You're so right, Earl. I mean, Dan can't argue about his experience because he has none. He can't argue that he's independent because he's not. He's been bought and paid for by the E-lines, right?
Yeah, right.
He can't argue that he's spent his legal career soldiering for the little guy, because he hasn't. He's been a corporate defense lawyer his entire career. He can't argue that he came from some really august academic institution and really has this impressive academic credential for his law school, because he went to Regis University, which is the extension of, Pat Robertson's school. So, I don't really trust legal education that is expressly religious in its inception. That, to me, is a little concerning. Frankly, I'd rather take my chances with the, quote, liberal judge that has a ton of experience putting bad guys behind bars, who actually got a real law degree from a real law school that understands the separation of church and state. That's what I'd prefer.
You know, Maggie, are you telling me that Justice Bradley has not legislated from the bench? Are you telling me Justice Rogan Sack has not legislated from the bench? You know, I mean, come on. Justice Bradley has not legislated from the bench. Come on. And yet, Maggie, it works, right? People fall for that. And so, you know, that is, so what does that mean anyway, too liberal? You know, and on the other side, if you flip the coin or flip the switch and you said, okay, so Dan Kelly then is going to legislate from the bench, but he's going to do it from a conservative bent. I mean, that's ridiculous. This is, you know, apples and oranges. And it's childish. It's a childish way of dealing with what is so critically important, you know, Maggie. When we look at all the things that we are faced with, we don't need childish people coming up with childish reasons for why you shouldn't support somebody.
You know, I'm going to give Janet a lot of credit. I think she very boldly and very in line with who Janet is came out, as she announced very early on, and said, here's what I'm going to stand for. I believe that individuals should make their health care choices in consultation with their doctors. That's what I believe in. That's my values. Now, it seems to me that about 15, 20 years ago, there's a whole group of squawking conservatives worried about death panels and people when they get to choose life-saving measures or not, and saying legislatures shouldn't make decisions about health care for individuals. I think that was an argument that was used just a few years ago. It seems that now is not of a concern if it happens to be women's health care decisions that we need to be talking about. I mean, all of this does have an extraordinary element of absurdity to it, Earl, on a number of levels. And one of the most absurd elements here is that we wouldn't even be having these discussions, and I don't think we'd be facing sort of the existential crisis that we are in the Supreme Court decision, but for Republicans effectively cheating in terms of the way that they've created these legislative maps. And so, you know, there's so much focus on this one race, which shouldn't be this important, right? All due respect to the Supreme Court, we shouldn't have to feel like the entire fate of our state and maybe the country is going to be determined by a single seat on our Supreme Court. And we wouldn't feel that way if we had fairly drawn maps that supported and reflected more accurately the purple demography of our state, and actually supported competitive districts, whether we're talking assembly or senate in state government. Hey, but we don't have that. We have a bunch of cheater pumpkin eaters.
Hey, Mark, Maggie, hang on to your steering wheel. I had a guy say to me, Earl, of all people, you, why don't you say that there needs to be more men on the Supreme Court? And that's why, Dan Kelly, there's already six women on the court. That's not fair. What happened to the men? So Maggie, I, you know, was a conservative guy, but
oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord,
and he was serious, Maggie.
Oh, I believe that, Earl. I believe he meant that. That men's interests couldn't possibly be considered or thought of by women on a Supreme Court. Gee whiz, jerk. What do you think happened when the state legislature in 1849 banned abortion, right? What do you think women and people of color have been saying for years and years? Thank you, my friend, for making the point for us that diversity matters. Let's bring on some CRT while we're at it. I mean, come on.
And you know, he was, and when he said that, he was dead serious. And I said, man,
no doubt.
I said, man, do you know, if you look politically anywhere, men and white men, you know, it's their world still, right? I mean, that you can't control everything.
Right. It's not right. We have a white male normative culture, a white male normative boardroom, a white male normative C-suite, a white male normative presidency, a white male normative Senate, a white male normative House of Representatives. And sure, are there exceptions? But you said it, Earl. It's a white cisgendered male world. That is the normative. And by normative, I simply mean the way that we think. If I say the word doctor, a white older dude, that's the image that pops into your head. That's what I mean by normative. This is the standard, the white male cisgendered standard, is the standard by which everything else is judged. And anything else that's a deviation from that is considered some kind of, like, weird threat to the unearned privileges that white male cisgendered folks have been earning since the inception of our country. And yes, I said that. You earn white male cisgendered folks are the recipients of all sorts of unearned privileges. That's what we're talking about when we talk about systemic issues. That doesn't mean that you haven't had hardships in your life or that you're not struggling. It means that a certain set of issues that women, people of color, trans people, LGBTQ plus people, that they struggle with, you are not also burdened by those things. And for anyone to assert that their interests cannot be captured by people that look differently from them, especially when you come from that normative group, that white male cisgender group, boy, that takes a whole lot of cojones.
All right, listen, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. The Dawn of Resistance, Maggie Dawn, is around. We'll be right back. Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. The champ is here. The champ is here.
Whoop. At least
the champ is here.
Finally in the studio, right?
Right. Listen, it is so good to have, you know, the Dawn of Resistance here. You know, Maggie, as I was talking about, you know, five women on the state Supreme Court, it is good to have women in leadership positions. Listen, there's no question that men without women.
That's some chuckleheaded just, stuff yeah, is going
not,
on.
It's not exactly, you know.
CEG Russia, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and
CEG Catholic Church.
Yeah. And so it's you guys are different than we are, right? And
amen. And thank you, Jesus.
But there's exceptions to every rule.
Of course.
Now,
gender doesn't define worth.
But there's some folk on the other side of the aisle, and they're the exception to the rule.
Correct. Yes.
Now here's what gets me. I hear conservatives talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and they called them the squad, and so they've been, you know, laughed at as women who don't know their way around and they're not very bright.
I don't know.
By Republicans,
yes,
right?
Yes, seems to me that they can, especially AOC, can make a hell of a speech and knows how to drive a point home.
Yeah, and she's, but there are a couple on the other side of the aisle Lauren Boebert. And
Lauren Blowhard.
Yeah.
and Marjorie Taylor. I don't get it. I mean,
so they've tried to mainstream Marjorie Taylor Greene, right?
That is not how's that going?
She is. How does she get elected? First off,
so this is a really interesting point, and we certainly can quote some of the insane, inane
things that she said,
wackadoo things that she said just this week. But one of the things that I was thinking about was what I would perceive as, I think, a lack of quality in candidates that I'm seeing and elected officials. And I don't mean this just on the red or the blue,
right,
just on one side. I'm seeing that sort of across the field. I think it's more acute. It causes greater damage to our democracy. It's much more dangerous from the right because they say things like, let's just quote Marjorie Taylor, I don't get it. This week, quote, we need to separate by red states and blue states and shrink the federal government. Everyone I talk to says this. From the sick and disgusting woke culture issues shoved down our throats to the Democrats' traitorous America Last policies, we are done. She goes on. We need to impeach Biden and give us a national divorce. I mean, what? She's tried to then clarify when she was on with Sean Hannity that she wasn't actually calling for a civil war, but a legal agreement to separate our ideological and political disagreements by state while maintaining our legal union. She then went on like a long Twitter thread. She failed to explain what a complex arrangement would look like, instead spelling out a convoluted scenario in which red states and blue states would simply make their own decisions more freely. In her far-fetched formulation, the Department of Defense would continue to exist, but the Department of Education would be abolished. Quote, our ideas, our policies, our ways of life have become so far apart that it's just coming to that point, continued Green. And the last thing I ever want to see is American Civil War. No one wants that. At least everyone I know would never want that. But it's going that direction, and we have to do something about it. So her something about it is to actually destroy the union, right? It's like what she's saying doesn't even make logical sense. It's so bizarre.
Well, she said the balloon that was flying over the country could have had nuclear waste in it. It could have had all of these, viruses, and so, that's why it should have been shot down, because what if it had nuclear waste in it? And I mean, she just is an ignorant person.
Correct. And here's the part that I will level criticism beyond just Marjorie Taylor Greene, who lacks absolutely any basic understanding of how democracies function, civics, right, or any of that. Like, she just doesn't get it. Here's her last quote, and this makes my point perfectly for me. I think this is a much bigger movement than most people in Washington even realized. You can just take a look at the tweets that I made just yesterday. The amounts of likes and retweets that those tweets got should tell people a lot. And they are not aware of it yet because they don't talk to the regular people. So we could go into the psychological terms for this thing, but I hear from a lot of elected officials, well, all of the people that I'm talking to. When I counsel elected officials or when I'm talking to newly elected officials, I try to tell them, listen, the people that will reach out to you, the people that you will hear from are always by definition not the silent majority. Okay. Your anecdotal interactions with individuals is not a statistically relevant sample by which you can draw meaningful conclusions.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. The Dawn of Resistance. We'll be right back. So. So, Maggie, how do you like my music selections for an old guy?
Oh, I always love your tunes, Earl. It's like a nice eclectic mix, right?
Yeah.
You got like the old school, then there'll be like a little neo soul, then like some hippie stuff from the 60s. I'm here for it. I love it.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's dawn of resistance. The champ is here. and you know, we were talking before we went to break about, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And, you know, the fact that people saw something in her. Let's talk about what could people have seen in her that, and you hear her speak, that would say, yep, that's the one. She's the person I want representing me.
I think you just put your finger on something that is sort of a new artifact of our political discourse, and that is people want their elected officials to look, feel, and sound like they do.
Right.
All due respect. No. I would like my elected official to sound, look, and feel maybe like me on my best day, but probably better than me on most days. Those are our leaders. Shouldn't our leaders be held to a higher standard of both rhetoric and behavior? You know what I'm saying? Like, you hear a lot of people ready to jump all over what I'm going to call pop culture leaders or heroes, like those that are exalted in other forums, and place quite a significant standard, high standard of behavior and how they speak and what they can speak about. And yet, apparently any idiot, as long as it serves your partisan purpose, can flap their gums in the most uninformed and dangerous ways. And that's acceptable because that makes people feel good about themselves. I don't think that works. It works for Marjorie Taylor Greene because she lives in a district that couldn't be any more red. So she has the benefit, as many representatives in the House do, of effectively pandering to the lowest common denominator within their district. But there's a couple of things, right? It's who do we want as elected leaders? Shouldn't they more represent the best of us? The second thing is, candidly, I don't think a lot of elected officials actually understand government very well. Sad to say, I see it all the time in my work from Milwaukee County. But I don't think Marjorie Taylor Greene actually understands what our union is. And simply because you seem to see distinctions between regions, P.S. Marjorie, that's been the deal since day one in our country, or by states, doesn't mean that you just blow up the whole union. I mean, that is about as traitorous of a thing to say. And then she just engages in, I'm not even sure she knows she's doing this, obnoxious gaslighting.
Well, right? Let's say to the president of the United States, you lie. He's having a speech. Well, we saw that under Barack Obama.
Yeah, but the guy got censured.
I know. But in this case, she's
Cruella DeVille in her white fur coat screaming like a person.
A banshee.
Right, yeah. That's lost control of her mouth. I mean, listen, what he was saying, there's some exuberance that happens. I think sometimes that's okay. I don't think screaming at the president, you lie, or calling him a liar, when what he's saying is true, is acceptable.
And I saw other Republicans shrill at watching her. Even Republicans are saying, oh what? This is a bridge too far for us.
Now, and I will say this, obviously, I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is garbage and has no business being in the House and should be stripped of our committees again.
Lauren Boebert as well.
Same, right? But I will say this, I think some of the criticism that came MTG's way would not have had some of the tone that it did if that had come from a man. Right?
Oh, no question.
Right, like, so she's stupid and a jerk and, like, doesn't get it and says dumb stuff. But she also gets an extra layer of vitriol and criticism because she's a woman. I mean, even my comment calling her Cruella de Vil and making fun of her clothes and all that kind of stuff has a certain tinge of gender commentary to it that I think we need to be attuned to. But the root of that, like, I wouldn't be talking about her stupid jacket if she hadn't done something that that engaged in behavior that's beneath the standards of decorum for our national elected representatives during the State of the Union.
But that's okay if you don't put her on committees that are
the oversight
important.
Like, wait a minute, Kevin. You put MTG, who clearly doesn't understand a thing about government, you put her on, like, the House Oversight Committee, which is the thing that's supposed to ensure that the various functions of government are occurring correctly. I mean, it's just so ludicrous in its first instance. And again, I just want to come back to this idea that I hear again and again from elected officials, all levels of government. Well, my constituents are telling me, well, the people that I've talked to, and my question is always, have you gone out and tried to figure out the people that aren't talking to you and what they think? Because you represent them as well. What about the people that work two or three jobs and that don't have time on their hands to call into your office or show up at committee meetings in the middle of the day for 3 to 4 hours, or who just don't have the time to follow the intricacies of local government? Because really, it's in local government where much of the decisions that impact people's day-to-day lives get made. And I just see that error made again and again and again by elected officials, assuming that their contact points with their constituents or with engaged citizens defines the entire universe of beliefs or desires or political leanings of their entire constituency. And that just is not the case. I try to explain it so many times. It continues to baffle me how someone can think that responses and likes on their Twitter feed should determine their policy positions.
You know, Maggie, as I've aged and watched what happens with our country. Let's do this. Let's bring Frank from Oak Creek up quickly. Frank, thank you.
Are canceled tonight, Wednesday, February 27th.
What is that?
Ooh, little warning, some school closures. Oh. We got hooked in there.
Okay, so is that what that is?
That was what Frank said when I put him online.
Okay.
Frank, where'd you go, man?
All right. All right. So anyway, so Maggie, I want to do this. Let's go to Tom quickly from L.A., and then I got somewhere else I want to go. Go ahead, Tom.
Tom, give me your classic opener. Say it, man. I rely on you.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, we the people are the government, ultimately, and we must never forget it. And we showed it last night with getting out and voting for Judge Janet, and I hope that that continues. What I want to say, though, is one thing we have to be careful with is that, and it's because of people like Scott Walker and Widow Hendricks and other donors, where they did the divide and conquer thing. And what they tend to do is just like what MAGA Taylor Greene is doing, which is basically taking that regular person, and because you have an education, because you're, as an example, a teacher or an attorney, that somehow, and our media plays into this, somehow an elitist position, rather than looking at all of the professions as something that adds to our whole social surroundings, and being able to say, yes, you are an expert if you went to school or training or whatever it might be for a longer period of time. Somehow in this country, it has become, if you're a concerned parent, you're a teacher. and they've done a very good job of that. So the thing is, we have to be careful. As an example, we know that Marjorie Taylor Greene is not the brightest, you know, light bulb in the shed, but we also have got to make sure that the constituents that she's actually working for understand how important it is to have someone that is an expert in the Congress and someone that's going to work for the people, because they will take that and they will say, wow, Taylor Greene is saying that you're all idiots. You know, I mean, she'll go and she'll say that to those people, and that's how she gets their votes. So we just have to be careful that we're not going, I don't think we're elitist, but the thing is, you know, when someone says, oh, so-and-so has a great education from this top university, right away, it kind of divides divide and conquer.
Let me say this, man, because I do, there are times when we have to walk on eggshells because we don't want to hurt the feelings of conservatives. I mean, you hear this, you know, people could be 100% wrong, but we should be really careful about what we say to them. But they're never careful about what they say about anybody else or to anybody else.
No, I agree. I just want to get the votes, and I want these people to stop dividing like the state of Wisconsin, like Walker did, where you have, you know, neighbors against neighbors and people against people, when we're all really trying to do the best thing, which is, you know, provide for our families.
We got it.
Yep.
You know, do all that.
Thank
you very much for the call, Tom.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with Tom. What you will always hear from me is calling out stupid. I think when it when it comes time to, like, hey, how do we construct campaigns to win and to attract voters all across the educational and workplace spectrum and wealth spectrum, we have to think about how to say things. And I think Biden's State of the Union was a great example of this. I think David Crowley's State of the County yesterday was a great example of this. Simply articulating very understandable middle class supporting policy positions and standing behind that and calling out things like what Marjorie Taylor Greene just said. Wait a minute, what? Are you suggesting the dissolution of the United States? And then she goes on this rambling tangent. I'm sorry, what does that mean? Where is that conceived of in the Constitution? In other words, for the purposes of talk radio here, ain't nobody quoting me that gives a toot about MTG. I'd love to think that it wasn't the case. But when you hear the folks actually engaging in a debate or trying to take on that rhetoric, I think confronting it almost with that confused look on your face, like, wait a minute, what? Explain that is part of how you have to show that the emperor's got no clothes.
The fact that she's a part of government.
Right.
Right? I mean, if you're not a part of government, then, you know, maybe, you know, you can
yeah, spout off some nonsense.
Right. But if you're an elected official, you shouldn't
be talking about dissolving the United States of America.
Yes.
And I think Tom's point, the like needle that I'm trying to thread here, is we can both call out stupid and we can also run campaigns that counter stupid candidates by not asserting that those that support them are stupid, but saying and putting forth policies that actually speak to their interests, that aren't, you know, in the line of the Sarah Huckabee Sanders nihilistic nonsense.
So I know we got to go to a break, but I know people who heard Marjorie Taylor Greene in her campaign to get elected. She was no different than what she is right now. And so what was it they heard from her said, oh, yeah, she's the one?
There's an MTG's
gotta
district.
Got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Is this Caribbean Queen? But he says Caribbean Queen. It's like the hardest to say first line of a song, right?
But It was a great song.
Oh,
and you, and you don't hear it much.
No, is this a shout out to Riri for taking it down at the Super Bowl?
Yeah,
love you, Rihanna, you billionaire, you.
Yeah, Billy Ocean, the one and only Billy Ocean, Caribbean.
So good.
You know, probably at some point in my past, I probably wanted to be a DJ.
A DJ.
Anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. The champ is here. I was going to call you Marjorie Taylor Greene, but
Don't worry about it. I know you don't mean that. Just a little slip of the tongue.
Yeah. Okay. These cameras.
Well,
really
we were chopping it up
things.
About you know, what's going on with MTG and why do people vote for her? She's again one of those people who's can say anything and they'll get elected, right, if they're the Republican candidate. But I think you take what she says, you hang it around the necks of candidates like Dan Kelly and those of her ilk, and you make them explain why a person like that is an acceptable leader in the Republican Party, right?
So let me ask you. Dan Kelly was once a Supreme Court justice.
Appointed, often, yes.
Yeah, but he was there.
Yep.
How often has a Supreme Court justice lost the seat that they were in?
Hardly
I don't know if
ever
it's
happens.
Ever happened in history, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, even Gableman pulled that hat trick off, and he's a total idiot.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I shouldn't call him an idiot. No. Just amoral and, you know, compromising of his principles. But seriously, that's a huge, huge gamble that they're taking. And I think this was not the election to make this play. And that's why you saw Doro getting so much support. In fact, I was a little surprised by the outcome, to be perfectly honest with you.
So hang on, let's bring Bob in quickly. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. Quickly.
I'm doing great, Earl, and Ms. Dawn, how are you?
I'm well, Bob. How you doing?
Fantastic. I'm hoping that the two of you will be interviewing the two candidates for the Supreme Court in the very near future.
Well, so there's no question that I am going to do that, and I'm going to see if we can set it up while Maggie is here. And we're definitely going to get Judge Protasiewicz on. I know there's no question several times, and I will reach out to Kelly, whether or not
he'll show.
I know.
He will not show.
I've reached out to Republicans on the other side of things, and they won't.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'd be so disappointed if he didn't show. That would really be, that's too bad.
Yeah.
The name that I've been, it's stuck in my mind when I hear the name Marjorie Taylor Greene is My Little Margie.
Yeah, well, that's from bygone days, right, Bob?
Little Margie. Brings it back. Her childhood behavior brings it back to...
what does it say though, Bob, when you accept that kind of behavior from your leaders?
That, yes,
I certainly don't. It's amazing that we've got the leaders of the opposition party that call themselves conservative and are willing to accept such rash behavior.
Hey, Bob, I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call, man. Call earlier next time.
Have a great day.
You too. Maggie, you know, you were saying.
Yeah, that's the rub, right? Like, Dan Kelly, what do you think about Marjorie Taylor Greene saying we should split up the union? What do you think about that? You're a strict constructionist.
There'll be crickets from him.
Right, of course. But, I mean, the idea that how do you campaign when you've got such, like, crazy things being said by leaders of the party is you make those that are not so observably crazy explain and deal with those things. And you don't let them off the hook. You don't let them dismiss it and write it off as some sort of silly notion. There was some part of what she was pontificating about, I couldn't even follow most of what she was saying, on Sean Hannity that Hannity actually agreed with. Right. And now we know that the entirety of sort of the Fox A-listers, right, knew that the entire election denier, you know, big lie, it's rigged. They knew all of that was garbage. They knew the people that were spouting it were either unhinged or knowingly lying. And they were effectively laughing at these people behind their back. So, again, When do conservatives themselves start to say, wait a minute, what if we're the suckers?
So conservatives who got in their feelings when then presidential candidate Hillary Clinton talked about deplorables, and they hit the ceiling, and it was like sacrilege that she said that.
Yep.
And then you turn around, and they've been supporting deplorables.
So,
come on.
So she actually put a word to it, right?
Right.
Here's what Ron Johnson, Rick Scott, and all of those people that want to undo Medicare and Social Security that they've spent the last 2 weeks trying to back away from, they think elderly people and disabled people are the deplorables.
Right.
They think poor people are the deplorables. They think women are the deplorables, women that want to have autonomy over their healthcare decisions. They think gay people are the deplorables. They're saying it to you. Sarah Huckabee Sanders said it to us. Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying it to us. So where do we start saying, oh, well, they've called us, they call us deplorable every day. And yet Hillary Clinton calls out what she believed to be misogyny, racism, hatred, and low-information voters. She correctly labeled it as deplorable. Now, what I will fault her for is that I do not like to color the entirety of a human being with the worst of their behavior. I always want to believe forever in the idea that people can open their hearts and minds, receive information, and change their minds. Let's hope that that's possible. So I wouldn't have called a whole group of people deplorables. I would have said, the beliefs and the values that you are espousing are deplorable, right? And certainly we paid, I think, a political price for that one line, right?
No question.
But again, your point's well taken, Earl, that the balance isn't there. Every single constituency that makes up any part of the huge Democratic tent has been accused directly or indirectly and labeled every day by conservatives as being deplorable.
Hey, the time flies too fast. Until we meet again.
Indeed, sir.
All right. That's the Dawn of Resistance itself, Maggie Dawn. We'll be back and we'll be joined by Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. What a 1-2 punch. We'll be right back.